You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, we're in for a long one. A long weekend, that is. And you deserve to spend it on the couch with a glass of something good. Luckily, there's Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery. With Drizly, you can compare prices on the biggest selection of beer, wine, and spirits, then get them delivered quickly. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
You wanted the best, but they didn't fucking make it. So here's what you get.
And fire. Rock's not dead. It's hiding. And you found it. Well done.
Are you ready to rock? Are you ready to rip it up? Do you know what I'm talking about? Are you ready to jig it up? Are you ready to dance? Are you ready to hit the floor? Are you ready? Are you ready? Cause if you're ready, I'm ready, man.
Dig, 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 dig.
Ah. Welcome to Cobras and Fire. I'm your host, Luce Cannon, along with the refuted Baco. How are you, sir?
I am well, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I'm not sure if that's grammatically correct, but how does it feel to be refuted?
I'm not going to lie to you, Luce. It feels quotidian.
Erroneous. All right. Let's continue on here. So what would you like to talk about? You have the floor. You're so close.
Let's talk about the Holodeo. Did you see the Holodeo?
I have not seen it. I saw the article, which I immediately put on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/cobrasandfire. And it is pretty much my dream come true for anybody to put a hologram on stage. And I want to know more about it. I have not seen it. Tell me more.
Well, of course, when I first heard about it, I immediately thought of my co-host and my compadre, and of course, as I like to call you, the godfather of the Cobras and Fire.
Why do I like holograms so much?
Maybe you should. Well, you talk about them a lot. You think it's an easy way for bands that are aging or want to replace members to keep the current lineup and in somewhat intact. So
yes, like we came up with our theory about the better options than having Axl Rose front AC/DC.
That was like the 100th time you've mentioned a hologram.
It is, but now that I'm thinking about this more, I mean, think about this though. AC/DC, you've got. You could do everything. You could have both Bon Scott and you could have, you know, Brian Johnson, both on stage. You could do both eras, and then you could have Axl Rose live too, and they could all do like the snake dance at the same time.
And only two of them are dead.
That's what I'm saying.
No!
Huh?
Which are the two?
That is true. But yeah, man, holograms way of the future. I think we should just keep hologramming the fuck out of vintage rock bands. Continue. Tell me more about it.
Well, I finally got to see like some quality video of it, and let me just get this out there. It's going to be a point of contention with us. I am officially against the hologram.
I've not seen it live. It's only in my mind that I think it would be wonderful.
Well, I mean, I don't have a big problem with your utopian view of how the how it could be used, but how it was used, it's pretty fucked up, man. Yeah, first of all, let's remember that Ronnie James Dio is no longer among the living.
Yes.
So this was at Wacken, that big German, whatever, three-day super metal fest.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And of course...
Spelled in the English way of Wacken.
Wacken, yes. And it's Dio Disciples, which is like not the original band, but guys who may have played with Dio at some point, but not necessarily.
Does it have the dude from Def Leppard that Dio hates?
No. That's he has a different Dio tribute.
Okay.
That's the Last in Line, I think they're called. Okay. Anyway, so I saw the video, and they played We Rock. Are you familiar with the song?
Yeah, it's not his best.
Anyway, it's a live video. It's a live audio feed of him singing it, right? He's got about an 8-foot left-to-right hologram space that he uses. And it must be because you can't see the hologram if there's stage lights. The entire stage was black. So when they show the close-up, you can kind of see this kind of creepy hologram thing. And when they show the crowd shot, you can't even tell where the stage is. And so that's kind of off-putting that you're there and it's... Like, first of all, why is Last in Line a band that's playing so late at night that it's dark enough to use a hologram, apparently? Because apparently that matters. And it got really fucked up loose when it got to the point where he's like, you know that where they put the mic out to the crowd for them to sing?
Right.
And he's like, what do we do? And he puts his mic out, and it is dead silent, because I'm pretty sure, just like me, the crowd was going, what the fuck's going on? But and then he walks the 4 feet that he can go to the left and goes, I can't hear you. And it's like, we're not fucking people. We're not Haley Joel Osment in Signs. You're fucking dead. We don't see dead people. This is fucking creepy as shit.
But here's my
no question. More. Shut it off. Stop it. I don't want to hear this anymore. I didn't like the idea of this dumb tribute band to begin with, and this is even more fucked up.
But my question is,
dead.
Hold on for a second. Is the hologram footage of him, I assume, just playing a random live concert that they've...
You know, I don't have the answer to that. My guess is, no, it's not. That I think it's more like a video game where they basically took the movement and patterns and then like fixed it to what they needed it to do. And they used an actual audio of him singing. And then the band played live behind him.
Right.
It was gross. Yeah. It was inappropriate. There were children there, Luce.
as the song went on though, did he slowly get bigger and taller and much like, did he go from like four foot five and just keep going to like 10 feet tall and then his eyes turn red and fucking lasers shoot out on the audience and shit like that? He's like, Super Dio! Did that happen?
No.
Because that is a lost fucking opportunity. So that's what I'm talking about. See, the hologram has to be respected and used in an effective manner. That is a fucked up thing they did. I would take...
Don't like, respect the dead! Respect the hologram.
Respect the hologram. If you're going to have Dio, you want to have Dio as he would want to be on Earth, and that is a taller motherfucker, and just keep getting bigger and bigger and more evil, and to become he needs to morph into the dragon and that he always wanted to be. He needs to have the sword come out, and like there should be wars on stage. There's a lot of shit they're missing here, Baco. Anyway, sometime that they'll be able to perfect this. This is just the first stage. Okay?
Dead, you asshole. I don't want to see what looks like a fucking animated corpse on stage asking me why he can't hear me.
Think of all the
things... You know why he can't hear me? Because he's fucking dead.
Think of all the things he could have done on stage if he was a hologram. Live.
You know what he can't do?
What?
Throw meat.
It is hard for a hologram to throw meat. I'll tell you that much. So
can't find Jesus either.
Nope. And you'll have to listen to the other episode to understand that reference.
You won't find a hologram backstage with a bucket of raw meat going, what am I doing with my life?
That's right. See, that's from the artificial intelligence. There's a lot of different levels to this.
Yeah.
But and then the hologram starts writing original music and stuff like that. There's a lot that can be done. Do not this is just the first. This is like version 1.0. Let's move on, and that is to what up till 24 hours ago was the Holy Grail, Jesus, the holy grail of albums for me. And what I mean by that is just something that I could never get my hands on, but I always heard was so amazing, and, you know, it inspired a major band to...
Paul, over here, Paul. He's not, Paul's not even looking at me. Paul!
Do you know what album I'm talking about?
We're not talking about Lickalotopus.
We're not talking about Lickalotopus. What we are talking about is The Scream with the album Let It Scream. Correct?
Correct.
And who's the lead singer of that band?
Oh, the one and only, the masturbatory aid vocally, John Corabi.
Now, John Corabi, as I've mentioned before, love Motley's 94 album. Great album. Love his vocals. And when that album first came out, and then subsequently, do you own the Union albums, or at least one of them, two of them?
Yeah, I have the two studio albums. Okay. I don't have the live one.
Okay. And that good transition there, because it kind of goes to the same type of thing. And obviously, Corabi is now the lead singer of Dead Daisies, which has just had an album come out, which is pretty damn solid again, and just a great straight-up rock record. And I will say that one of the things that I was so interested about hearing that I never heard this album that you had and shared with me is the fact that I heard a song called Man on the Moon on their Live at the Galaxy album, the Union's Live at the Galaxy, which came out in, like, I don't know, let's call it 2000. Their two studio albums. And I was like, what is this song? It's not on either of the Union albums. They make no reference to the fact that it's an old Scream song, but it was like my favorite song on the album. But it was a live version. And it had some kind of goofy stuff going on. It wasn't the best recording. Have you ever heard that album, by the way?
No.
Okay. Pretty solid, because they do some Carnival Souls songs. They do Scream. They do Union. And they do Motley. 94 stuff, so it's got a really pretty cool blend with Bruce Kulick. So,
oh, now I need to get my hands on it.
But anyway, going back to the album, I think it's solid. I think it's, but I will tell you this: I kind of think about Corabi. I think now, and I will say this is a very rare thing for anybody to say, I think Corabi's voice now is better than it ever has been. On this album, I think he's almost like the first Aerosmith album with Steven Tyler, where he's got his voice, but there's only a couple songs. That's not a better way to put it. There's only a couple songs where he's really the John Corabi that I love his vocals on, and that is in the Outlaw, great fucking song, but it's not a vocal performance that I would say that is the fucking man. Like he's just he's there. He's just not there like he is now. The song that I think is awesome too is Never Loved Her Anyway, which has definitely some Beatle influence to it. Mm-hmm. And again, this is only 24 hours of me taking it in. And the one I am going to feature, because I cannot find a song that I like better on it. And that is the song that I've liked for years and never heard the original, which I'm about to feature, which is Man the Moon.
Great song.
Truth. That was Man on the Moon by The Scream featuring John Corabi. And the latest album, Dead by the Dead Daisies, called Make Some Noise. My two favorite tracks. Check them out. We'll probably feature them on a show in the future. But track three, Song and a Prayer, and Last Time I Saw the Sun. Those are my two favorites. And they also have a kick-ass cover of Fortunate Son on there, too. It's just incredible guitar. Just a rocked-out version of that track. And I know you're not a covers guy, but I think you're going to like that one.
It ain't me. It ain't me.
All right. So what you got?
We're going to go back to the glory hole. Well, this band doesn't really fit a whole lot of what we do. The singer is also done a lot of different stuff that I like a lot.
Okay.
And we have talked about it, but never featured any music by any of his groups. And they recently reunited.
Dokken.
Well, I do like Dokken, and I wouldn't say they're one of my favorites, unless it was 1987.
I do. Just a quick comment on the Dokken thing. Is it really a Dokken fever pitch in Japan? I don't get that. Like, they do a reunion, and they have six dates in Japan, and that's it. Are they just waiting? But it's not that band. So just give it to me.
No, that is... It's the Misfits.
Oh, yes, of course. You know, we've featured Danzig before.
When?
We did...
the one where I made fun of Danzig.
We did Die My Darling.
You played, like, a Metallica cover.
I know, but you mentioned, you said, here's... Die, My Darling, and I played it.
No, today we're going to feature the actual band. There's a song by the Misfits that isn't always covered by Metallica or any other thing. It's a song called Children in Heat. Have you heard it?
I have not, but I'm looking forward to hearing it. I do like some Misfits, so go ahead.
On the upside, it's short.
Yes, it's probably a minute and 45 seconds. Entire headliner for this fest called Riot Fest. That's
Riot Fest, yeah. Right, there's one for me. There's one. You fucking asshole, go.
The rest of the lineup is for shit.
Yeah, just show up late, see the Misfits, say I don't understand why you like them, Baco, and then go home.
That was $90 for that set.
Yeah, well, if I lived there, I'd be there, and if I felt like driving 8 hours, I'd be at the Chicago one.
Yeah, sure. All right, well, we're going to do a little punk twofer here, and that is, you know,
punk
bands are very miss, very, very few times hit for me. And but one of them that's always crept through, and I own about.
It's Green Day, isn't it?
No. but I do have some Green Day, but one of them that has stuck with me for, I think I have five or six albums by them. And I was actually talking
to... Effects?
No.
Hold on. Like, give me one more guess.
Yeah, go ahead. It's not that hard. What's it called?
I think... God, I can't remember the name. Go ahead. Whatever.
All right. Well, this band puts out an album almost every 2 years consistently. They've been around, I think, since 86. And they just put out their latest album, just I think in 2014. But they kind of have it, talking in front of the show, Rob, who's a much bigger fan of this band than I am. But they kind of do this thing where they do good album, terrible album. Good album, terrible album. And it's if you look at their whole catalog. But the band is Bad Religion.
Fugazi?
Bad Religion.
That was the one I couldn't think of, by the way.
Yeah. So... In 1996, so right at the cusp of the qualifications, they came out with an album called The Gray Race. And this is one of my favorites. The song is, and a lot of times with Bad Religion, the songs that are a little less punky, I guess, are the ones I really like. And this is one of those songs that's just a straight out rocker, and it's called The Streets of America.
Radiating thoughts on
That was Black Flag with Avenues of Nebraska or something.
Close
whatever.
Enough.
Punk, right?
Yeah, punk. Yeah. Go ahead. What do you want to talk about?
I don't actually mind Bad Religion, so I'm sorry I made fun of your band. Great pick, Liz. Love it.
All right. So continue.
Well, let's talk about Rat, huh?
Oh, absolutely. That's a hell of a transition. What do you want to talk about? What about them?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Let me tell you. I'm sure you have a lot to say, but and you will. Obviously, I'm quite aware, and we're both of us are amused as well as everyone about the whole Bobby Blotzer's Rat deal. I mean,
but before we get too far, are you and I possibly the only people on the planet that actually are kind of rooting for the train wreck?
Rooting. That's all I'm. I don't think so. I think everybody in the world is.
Oh, thank God. I mean, I don't want to pay money to see this band be good.
No.
I want to be disappointed and have them throw a fit, or I want something fucked up to happen, man. The last thing I
Why
want...
Why else would you go?
...is to spend $7 and find out they're not that bad.
Well, that's the whole thing. I'll back it up like this. Yeah. So for those that are uninitiated, which if you're listening to the show, I don't see how you... But the fact is that about 2+ years ago, Bobby Blotzer decided to do the Bobby Blotzer's Rat Experience Superstar Extravaganza or whatever the fuck it was called. And then after that, he decided, fuck it, I'm just going to call it Rat.
He did 3 shows, okay. and nobody came. And he's like, wait, nobody's going to pay me for this. So anyway,
so I'm going to just call it Rat. Okay, so then it's just him. And then all new dudes, and then somehow...
We should give his side of the story at least. This is Bobby's side of the story. The other guys in the band don't want a tour. It turns out this part is true. Bobby and Warren DeMartini are the two owners of the business entity of Rat. Warren has not pissed away everything he's made, and Bobby has.
Okay.
But Bobby wants the tour... And here's the reality is the other guys are okay with touring just without him. Stephen Piercy quit because of some insensitive things that Bobby Blotzer said on multiple occasions on social media while drunk. And one of them involved his sister who died. And that just was kind of the last straw, I think, as far as Stephen Piercy was considered. But at that point, he was legally out of any control of Rat, so he just quit.
Gotcha.
Anyway, the whole thing's kind of fun, and it's a lot of fun to pay attention to. And Bobby Blotzer loves putting the stuff out there. He even went as far as to one of the guitar players who just quit, even though nobody knows what's going on. Bobby defended the fact that he hadn't paid the guy to people who didn't know he hadn't paid the guy.
He's an excellent businessman.
Yeah.
So I mean, the whole thing is that what's funny about this is that, well, many things. Is and you'll get to the next level of this in a second, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to back it up, I amazingly in the last 7 years, I've seen Rat 3 times.
Nice.
And not Bobby Blatzer's Rat, but like maybe it wasn't 7 years ago, but whenever they did that Poison Rat tour, Jesus, I'm gonna say it was 2007. It was $10 for a ticket.
Was that Jizzy Pearl then?
No, it was the original. It was Stephen Piercy.
Okay, all right.
Stephen Piercy. Actually, Karabi was on guitar.
Yeah.
And everything like that. But I saw them, not good. And I saw them twice on that tour just because of the fact that it was $10 and it was 2 different towns and I found it amusing.
I saw them in a bar with Jizzy Pearl and they were amazing.
Were they?
And I talked to Bobby Blotzer afterwards. Can you believe that?
No. What did he say? Do you say at some point I will fucking get rid of all these people and tour by myself?
No, it was more along the lines of, hey, bro.
He was a bro guy?
Yeah. Okay. And I was in the bar after hours, so I didn't get to talk to him too long.
And then I saw, again, this funny show in Vegas at this place that was Dokken, Rat, and... Warrant, who didn't show up. So basically, shells of bands. I guess Rat was the most closest one. Rat was fucking horrible. So all I can say about this is that probably, like you said, you don't want to pay money to show up and then to be good. I would tell you that they probably were better. It would not surprise me if I saw them to be like, probably played better than. I mean, Piercy was terrible. I mean, it was just bad. And this is coming from somebody that I liked them. You know what I mean?
I met Piercy last summer, and he was about to perform with Scrap Metal, which is what the Nelson Brothers do. It's kind of like one of those Sin City Sinners things.
Sure.
Except for they never practice, and the lineup always changes, and it was horrible. But, you know, to 50-year-old white people in northern Minnesota, it was awesome.
But he came out
and he was horrible, and he was tuned up before the show. So
yeah, well, before we get to the final level here, I will say this too, is that what I was really hoping for you when they come to town is that, like I told you, in the same venue. Oh, right. But when they come to town, that at some point during the show, Bobby always does a little stand-up routine. It's actually part of a set list. I saw it on their Facebook page where it has like the names of the songs, and then it just has one part that says Blotzer. Which is not a drum solo. It's whenever he comes out and starts talking to the crowd, validating how awesome they are and that they're doing justice to the name. I'm
so looking forward to this. I really hope they stay together long enough, even if he just cobbles together just pieces of musicians.
Right.
And like arms and legs.
But just probably gets there. Gets it just part of it. Because he's going to have nobody less. Because what? He had two people quit. But what I'm hoping is when he gets to your town, though, during that little routine that he does with Blotzer, the little Blotzer bit when he comes out, that he goes, and he goes, people, do you know what Bobby's favorite dinosaur is? Nickelodeon. That's Bobby's favorite dinosaur.
I hope he does the whole build up like, do you like the lick things?
Who here?
But then, when it gets to the punchline, he's like, Tyrannosaurus Rex.
He fucks it up.
He's like, I like dinosaurs.
I like Tyrannosaurus Rex. Actually, I like those Velociraptors. Here's back for more of Out of the Cellar.
We'll be right back.
All right. Well, this man's from Norway.
Dory.
Does that help you?
Nope.
I would say the look and sound of this band is what anytime, I don't know if you want to call it Hollywood or movies or the media or television shows, like Steel Panther. Let's put it that way. This band embodies the stereotype, not the reality, of hair metal. And this record came out in 1987. They had a song called 10,000 Lovers. Does that help you?
It does not.
Well, the band is called TNT. Do you know
them? I've heard of TNT. I know the fact. The only reason I know about TNT actually is because of the singer's temporary employment with Skid Row.
Very good.
That's the only reason. I've never heard anything by them, so I'm interested.
Nothing before that, huh?
No, I just.
He's an amazing singer, and this is an amazing song, by the way.
Okay, okay.
Well, off their Tell No Tales record, which, by the way, their first two records, their first one was called Knights of the New Thunder, and this one was called Tell No Tales. And in both those, if you just abbreviate it out to the initials of the title, you get TNT.
Oh, very, very, very clever.
Yeah. There's also a local AC/DC band called TNT. Don't tell this TNT about that TNT.
Of course,
that TNT is going to hear from this TNT's lawyers. And I think the singer that was in Skid Row, he's actually from New York.
Yeah.
The band is from Norway, featuring Ronnie Letekro on guitar, and I want to say Splabish Fluke on drums, other Norwegian fucking sounding IKEA name on bass. So. The song is called Everyone's a Star, Luce. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
All right, so that was TNT with Dynamite Exploders. And, great track. What was the name of that track again?
That one's called Everyone's a Star.
Everyone's a Star. But TNT always...
Featuring Schmeckel de Beckel on drums.
That's his proper name.
Floyd Slamagong.
Oh, Norway. So anyway, so, you know, you hear TNT
the
immediately.
Motherland.
Yes.
Go ahead, do your transition.
God bless it. You hear TNT, obviously you're going to think of AC/DC, and that's my pick.
Well, I was going to think of Wile E. Coyote.
That's Acme.
He uses TNT, right?
Oh, I guess he does. So anyway. Anyway, so let me continue on this path, and that is that AC/DC, hard to do a deep track from AC/DC, right? I mean, what is really a deep track from one of the biggest bands, correct?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we could do it, but that's because we're amazing. So
yeah, we are. And so, but the point is if you took the average person off the street, especially the Bon Scott era, people are going to know less of. But there's two of the worst. AC/DC has two worst selling albums. Do you know them? And I'll give you a little hint. I'll help you out a little bit. There's one actually from Bon Scott's era, and one that's from Brian Johnson.
All right, the Bon Scott one has got to be Power Age. Correct. Or Power Age or whatever.
Yep.
Brian Johnson, it has to, I know Fly on the Wall was okay, so everything between Back in Black and there is in the safe zone. So I'm going to go with, well, not Rocker, was it called Ball Breaker? Was that the name of the record?
I'm pretty sure that didn't sell very well, but that's not the worst one.
Okay, what is it?
Flick of the Switch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was so close to Back in Black. You wouldn't think that. Well, you think Back that would in Black, that would at least creep to like million or something.
You would have thought.
Because wasn't that like Back in Black for those about to rock and then Flick of the Switch, right?
Flick of the Switch, and then they went to Fly on the Wall. So those,
yeah, Fly on the Wall did pretty good.
I think it did okay, but the.
Or,
Yeah, they didn't have Mutt Lange. They didn't. I don't think the label pushed it as much because they weren't. They just kind of went. They just like self produced. Anyway, that's not the actual album I'm picking. But
you know, Mutt Lange, fuck Shania Twain.
Pretty aware of that. But thank you. And so essentially,
would you?
How am I supposed to transition from there? We're going back to this. The main thing is that I'm not picking Flick of the Switch, but that just happens to be a little factoid. Power Age, probably my favorite AC/DC album. If I was going to do a blend...
Seriously?
Yeah. Fucking love it. That one and...
Don Jameson there?
That, if I did a blend of actually that and...
I'm a fan of blending things.
Let There Be Rock. If I was going to take those two albums and put them together.
Let There Be Rock is that's probably my favorite.
Yeah, well, they're kind of sister albums if you want to think about it, and
I do like sisters.
So with that said, that the track I'm going to pick, and these are all winners on this album, and actually this album I think has Bon Scott's best lyrics too. By the way, there's a. And he by far, I mean, come on, as a lyricist, is there anybody? It's pretty easy to beat Brian Johnson as far as lyrics.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the lyrics on Back in Black almost give him a lifetime pass.
You know why though?
It's almost like it's like a black visa.
Well, I'm going to say that I think that most of those are written by Bon Scott.
I don't think they are.
I think they are. I think the main reason that Back in Black was such a great album is that the majority of that album was written with, and that they just never gave credit to. My conspiracy theory is that's why that's such a great fucking album, is because they were coming off of Highway to Hell. They had most of it done, at least the guts. There's been rumors about that forever, and that's why they never could equal it after that, too. That's my theory. And that's why Brian Johnson's lyrics, for the most part, after that album sucked. So, anyway... My track is, after my conspiracy theory, is AC/DC's classic that never was a classic, never played live that I've ever seen, and that is Down Payment Blues.
Down Payment Blues.
What you got on your end?
Well, can we at least talk about my trip to Rock USA?
Of course you can.
Well, my feelings on the state of Wisconsin, I think, are pretty well known, except for that nobody knows who the hell I am.
They're well documented.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oshkosh.
So you've, at some point in your life, been on the road and there's been a semi that had cattle in it, right?
Of course. That's pretty much standard operating procedure in West Lafayette, Indiana.
So especially in the Midwest, has it?
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, on a freeway, so let's make sure everybody understands where we're at. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the state of Wisconsin, where I would think that maybe the whole state knows that I hate them. Anyway, we're just doing one of those slight veers next to a cattle car on a freeway. So we're kind of like veering towards the right. And they have these little slots on the sides that I assume are meant to be closed, and they weren't. And all of a sudden, all this shit and piss starts flying out the side. You know, because gravity is now shifting as we slightly veer at 70 miles an hour together. Shit and piss of cows start flying all over the front of my car. I don't know what to do. I'm not even sure if this is really happening.
They don't teach that in driver's
ed. Yeah. Do I drive faster or slower? I did both, and either worked. It just ended up with my car being covered with shit as I'm running the windshield wipers back and forth, emptying all the blue juice.
And isn't that pretty much a perfect summary of your experience at Rock USA?
The venue, my God, what a fucking train wreck. We get there, and I show them what we're there for. They know who I am.
Can I jump in here real quick?
Yep.
Okay, so describe, how many days is this fest?
It's 3 days.
Okay, so it's a three-day fest. How many bands approximately? 30?
Oh, God, no. Let's see, 15, 17?
So 17 bands total over 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Continue, please.
One stage. We get in, and basically everybody knows what's going on unless you don't drink. If you are drunk or getting drunk or selling booze to drunks, you knew what was happening. It was really weird. It had kind of like a small town, kind of like a community feel to it. It wasn't like, this is fucking Slipknot, Alice in Chains. This is not, you know, Train and something like, you know, Smash Mouth.
But let me jump in here, though.
Yeah.
The fact that you told me, and I've been to these fests, which I have a love-hate relationship with.
Sure.
Now, the fact that they spread this over 3 days with one stage, and how long was the transitions between each band?
45 minutes.
Oh, fuck that. I would be dead.
They didn't even play music between them.
That's insane.
They occasionally played a commercial.
You realize that's the same thing as inviting people over to a party, and then at some point in the party, just shutting the stereo off when things are getting going. And then everybody just fucking staring at each other for 45 minutes and then starting the party up again. That doesn't make any sense in any way, shape, or form.
You know, I'm just going to summarize it this way. I'm going to wrap it up. We were there. We got there, and it's 2 in the afternoon. I wanted a bottle of water. So I went up to, like, a food vendor because we couldn't find anybody that was just selling water.
that's
and crazy. He said, they're not allowed to sell water. I have to go to the alcohol tent. So I went to the largest bar I've ever seen at a festival. And I sat in line for 3 minutes, and I could have gotten laid because I was propositioned by one woman twice. I should dig into that more, but I won't. All right. The bartender comes up, and like I said, it was only about 3 minutes, but when the bartender came up, this woman who had already offered to have sex with me laid into her because of how long I had waited. And I'm like, I am not with her. I'm just trying to find a bottle of water. And she's like, I don't know where you can get one. Maybe over there? So it took about an hour to find out that you can only buy a bottle of water at the beer tent, which was not the alcohol tent, by the way. They have a separate tent for alcohol and a separate tent. Anyway.
That's what I'm saying. When you see these things, though, 3 days, major bands, renting out space, whatever like that, I mean, who is running the shit? Who invests all this money to have? We could run this better.
Oh, definitely. Are you kidding me?
And we know nothing about running a show.
And we all the complaints you and I have about AEG. This is like AEG's retarded sister. It's time for the Box of Glory.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and then it's yours. So here's the last one. The glory hole is closed after... Well, this is another local band, Luce. Does that help you?
Jesus Chrysler.
No.
Hold on. I think it is... He was featured on the single soundtrack?
Nope. A member of the band dated Winona Ryder.
Oh, okay. Awesome. A little Soul Asylum.
Ooh.
And I'm going to say that this is either off of the Misery album or the big one. Black Gold?
Grave Dancers Union. Grave Dancers Union. It's off that one, yes.
Okay, bring it.
Well, Grave Dancers Union was their big one, the one that kind of broke them.
Mm-hmm.
It had all the...
Runaway Train, of course.
Runaway Train, Black Gold, Somebody to Shove.
Yep.
But this is old and deep.
So you're going to go even previous to that?
No, I'm playing some off this record. I mean, but I'm just saying it's deep.
Okay.
And of course, it fits the old thing. There's a song on here I love called April Fool.
Oh, yeah.
I was choosing between this and 99%, but I think April Fool.
Yeah, 99% is another great one, too. That's a rocker. April Fool?
April Fool.
Quitting after one more last one. Playing the clown. If I want your opinion, I'll ask you. I can get myself down. Night driving without headlights. Wearing sunglasses too. Looking good, but sure don't. Scotch with my legs tied, jumping rope and wet cement, leather and midday sunshine on your mother's money. Anything to
All right, Paco. Great pick. Little April Fools from Soul Asylum. I like this. We're bouncing all over the place and getting some tracks I have not heard.
Yeah, man. It's kind of fun, man.
Absolutely.
This has been a great couple episodes. What do you got, though? You have to have something kind of cool coming up, right?
I do. And that, but first, kind of an interrelated story is I just saw the Bullet Boys at a place called Herman's Hideaway.
Right down the street from me. Oh, right on.
Yeah, and they got some press passes to it. And it was a good show. I would have never even considered seeing him live until you told me about, you know, the fact that you saw him, and of course you had a little bro time with Mark Torian.
but they were good.
They're good.
How were they?
They were solid. I will tell you, it was a funny show because we went to it was a Tuesday night show. The show started at 7 o'clock at night, and there was, and this is way too many opening bands, and four opening bands of bands.
Are we on the same page? We both hate that.
I can't stand that. I'm looking at that. I'm like, okay, hold on for a second. It's a Tuesday. People need to work. You're putting four bands on stage prior to the headliner, which means they are not getting on there. And I guessed, they're not getting on stage until 10:30 or 11 o'clock. That was my guess. But so Bullet Boys hit the stage, and I was looking forward to seeing them from what you told me about that they were good live. And I got to tell you, I own one album by them. I own the first one, self-titled, with the apple, with the bullet going through it, just to make sure that you understood that it
was. That one and the new one is the only ones worth having.
But here's the thing I'll just say about them is that who the fuck told Mark Torian back in the day to not play guitar?
Oh, I know. Isn't it amazing?
The guy's a great guy.
I asked him that in my interview. Like, why didn't you remember? I don't know if you recall that, but I was like, you're really fucking good.
He's great.
Why weren't you playing guitar, like, on the first, like, it turns out he probably was in the studio, he said, but it was more of an image thing, like, which is also why he was blonde and.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say, is that they really, I think, handicapped him because, you know, I go back to that first album and it's okay. There's some songs I like on it, but of course, it's got the little David Lee Roth yelps. It's produced by Ted Templeton. It's definitely a Van Halen framework. After I saw the show, I was like, I was really impressed. His voice sounded good, all that, and, you know, good stage presence. A fun show. They were well rehearsed, tight. Musicianship was spot on. And this is from somebody that's not really that big of a fan. I was really impressed.
Some things are better left unsaid. make a pill for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't think you make a pill for that. Don't think you make a pill for that.
Hi, hi. Hi, hi.
Yeah. So anyway, so he was solid, but there are some funny bits, as I know you wanted to hear. You
ready? Yes.
First off, I got a number. I think I had the first official number on stage. But this is you know how you say like the Mark Torian's biggest fan is Mark Torian, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I've never seen anybody do this on stage before. He got up there and he goes like, first off, he goes, oh, I just want to thank everybody for coming out. I want to let you know because the place had dissipated a lot. As far as people in attendance, he goes, we've been playing the last couple of shows. It's been packed to the gills, people. Packed to the gills. All the last couple of shows. We've got shows coming up here. And I just want to say it's great. We've been selling tons of our new album. We just hit 25,000 sold. Gave a specific number. That's the number we've been looking for, right?
Yeah, but because it was him, we can't believe it.
Okay, but 25,000 for somebody to be on stage and say,
"Oh yeah, I know where you're going with this." Now it's like that's the number.
That's the number, 25,000. And here's some breaking news. He said, "Also, we just got a contract with I can't remember the name of the
Frontier,
whatever it is, for two more albums. Our new album's coming out in February of 2017.
For those listening, here's a Frontiers record label deal. You pay for the recording, you pay for everything, they will distribute it.
Is that how it works? Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, Frontiers Record is pretty much just a distribution deal.
Okay.
I think you get a cut of the profits and the sales, but they don't give you any upfront money.
So I thought that was interesting, but so there's that number we're talking about, like 25 to 50. Is a respectable number. So I after you said that, it reminded me I don't own Elefante. Like I don't own the physical. So I went over to the merch table and I said I would like to buy a copy of Elefante. They said we don't have any. I said, what do you mean? He's like we forgot to bring them.
That is so funny.
So anyway, this is the part that was the weirdest. Is at some point, and I don't know what song this was because I forget.
It's a great story.
Huh?
I love this story. It...
What?
I'm literally pulled in. Keep going.
So at some point, there was some ballad that he was doing an intro for. And I don't know if he did this at your show. And if he did, this is very uncomfortable. You're watching the Bullet Boys. They're playing Smooth Up In You. They're playing Hard As A Rock. And all of a sudden, he transitions to going, who here believes in heaven? And everybody goes, woo! And it was like a little like, okay, we're getting a little deep here. He's like, that wasn't enough people. I got a lot of people that are dead and are in heaven. So I'm going to ask you again, who here believes in heaven?
Yeah, that's new. Last two shows I saw him. So
my buddy Scott's like, this is getting a little weird. What's this guy talking about?
He's like, is this Hollow Dio?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, who believes in heaven? And I was like, my whole thing is like I just thought it would be a great transition into Smooth Up India if that's what he was doing. Here's the build-up. It was some like acoustical ballad he played real quick. Who believes in heaven? Anyway, enough about God. Here's Smooth Up In You. But yeah, so it was a good show. But here's my transition, and this will be the last for the day for the show. And that is that obviously Van Halen was a huge influence, and definitely at least the you know they had Ted Templeton on both that and Freak Show, and. Van Halen, Deep Track. What's kind of a deeper album for Van Halen?
Oh, Van Halen 3?
Well, that's a terrible album by Van Halen.
Okay, so you want to go probably more Roth era, right?
Yes, Roth era.
Diver Down maybe, but I'm going to go Fair Warning. I don't know. I mean, all those records sold like 8 million copies or more, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah, it's hard to do a deep one, but I'll say that
you can find a deep track though.
Yeah, I mean,
Pot for Teacher would be my pick. So.
Well, you know, Van Halen's like Kiss is one of the first bands that I just bought the whole discography on, and actually bought it on album, and because I could buy them for like $3 each at the store, and one of the two of them that I grabbed and and definitely are two of my favorite albums by them are Fair Warning and Women and Children First. And both of those albums, definitely not the most popular. I mean, Unchained's the only real single from Fair Warning. And
can I piss off some Van Halen terrorists right now?
Go ahead.
Mean Streets and Unchained are two of the worst Van Halen songs ever.
I'll give you Mean Streets. You're insane for Unchained. Love nope. Unchained.
Sticking with it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'm going with my deep track is one that pretty much, I think, summarizes what makes Van Halen great. The vocal harmonies, just everything that makes Van Halen kick ass, and that is the last song off of Woman and Children First in a simple rhyme. All right, Baco, I think we're exhausted. We've had a lot of old, a lot of deep, and a lot of ridiculous banter. So that was a long journey to a total of 10 songs each. Well, we've done it. My God. So
I think we might have three episodes there.
We might. So I think it is about 2 a.m. on your end. And remember, Rock's not dead. It's hiding, and you found it. Drunk and exhausted. Cobras and fire. Well done. Oh, my God. Goodbye, Baco.
Good night.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.